Basically three things that I want to tell you about today. One is sort of a broad overview of the whole panoply of organic activities that we have going on in ERS at this point. Two is some specific findings from one of our big projects, which is tracking the adoption of certified organic farming systems in a very detailed way. And then the third part of the talk is to tell you about some findings from our organic dairy survey. These are some of our first findings. We've got a lot going on with that survey. At this point, let's just say 20 years ago, mid-80s, we had a little bit going on in ERS, the Economic Research Service, on organic agriculture, a little bit of market analysis. Now we have activities in all three major divisions, modeling consumer demand for organic food, research on organic food markets, and again, looking at the adoption of organic systems. And one little thing about the Economic Research Service, in contrast with the Agricultural Research Service, which I'm not sure how many employees is in all of the research stations across the country and in other parts of the world, but it's a big number. The Economic Research Service in the Research Economics Extension and Education Mission Area in USDA is only 400 people total. That's everybody in the agency. So we're trying to cover every single bit of food and agriculture systems in the United States, every issue, with a very small staff, and all intramural research. Some specific examples of activities are analysis of consumer demand and prices in specific markets. We have a database of historical prices on some fruits and vegetables, on livestock and eggs, based on Agricultural Marketing Service data. And there's an article, for instance, on trends in the organic egg and poultry market, which has been exploding, as you'll see from data in a few slides. Also, we have some very good research modeling fresh organic produce consumption in the United States based on home scan data. You've probably heard of supermarket scanner data. You've probably noticed supermarket scanner data. Home scan data are people that are actually they're bringing their purchases home and then they're scanning it at home. And that actually captures a wider set of marketing venues than supermarket scanner data. One of the big projects that's going on, this is on the cusp of having research results, is a nationwide survey of all the certified organic food handlers in the United States, all the processors, distributors, brokers, et cetera. Everyone that has to have certification is handling food, organic food in some way. We conducted a survey of them in 2006. Those survey results will, I think, have benefit for farmers as well as processors, as well as policymakers. It's really good. It's our first look in this country at what some of the marketing relationships are, as well as some really specific details about what are the missing ingredients, what are the things that processors are having a hard time sourcing, and so forth. I'm not going to tell you about this project right now. I'm going to tell you about this one in a minute. This is the big this is our biggest survey in the Economic Research Service, the Agricultural Resources Management Survey, which we expanded 3 years ago to include organic producers. But let's lay that aside for the minute. Right now what I want to do is tell you a little bit about that data that is tracking certified organic acreage and livestock in this country. Several people have mentioned it today. It's really the only trend data that we have at this point. It's the only really specific data that we have at this point to get a handle on what and where the adoption pattern looks like in this country. So basically, in ERS, we set up a system to track it we set the system up before 97. Our first year of data is 1997. We're actually collecting data from every single certifier, virtually every single certifier in the United States. There are actually a couple of holdouts that tend to be very, very tiny certifiers. Actually, holdout is a misnomer. They are so small that they've typically gone out of business by the time we can contact them. At any rate, the intention of this data is to be a census of all certified acreage and livestock. The estimates are available by commodity and by state, and I believe we're tracking 30-some commodities, 30-some specific crops, and 10 or 12 specific livestock species. Okay, this table is missing the year. So your first bar there is 1997, the second bar is 2000, and the third bar is 2005, in case you're interested. What these numbers, the trend that these numbers show is basically pasture and rangeland. In this graph, it actually looks like it's going up consistently over time, but if you see this plotted out every year, you'll see some really big variations in pasture because there have been some really big operations coming in and out. And so that sort of makes that data a little more volatile. Cropland is a lot more consistent. Cropland has gone up pretty steadily, but it's increased at a moderate rate over this period. Animal agriculture, livestock, has gone up at a super fast rate over this period. And operations have gone up very modestly. A lot of producers are expanding the operations that they have, and we probably have some big operations that have come in. This just shows you what those numbers look like over time for pasture and cropland. So you see a little of the pasture variability and so forth. This map is nice because it sort of captures the intensity at a state level of organic production. California is the number one state in this country in organic agriculture. They're number one in organic operations, and they are number one in certified organic cropland. I actually, a number of years ago, expected for sure by now we would have a Midwestern state being the top state in certified cropland, but we're still working our way there. Because obviously California specialty crops, and specialty crops are grown on modest amounts of acreage relative to field crops. What you can also notice in this map is that the darker the state, the more operations. So you see the Pacific Northwest, you see California, the Pacific Northwest, the upper Midwest, and the Northeast, and basically Texas as being the states with the heaviest number of operations. That's not necessarily going to correspond to the heaviest amount of cropland. So obviously in the Northeast you've got very small farms, a lot of direct marketing operations, as well as in the last few years the increasing number of dairies. And then this graph, or chart rather, gives you an idea of what the adoption patterns look like at a real specific level. So what we've seen overall is that adoption is very heavy for specialty crops, for fruits and vegetables, and it's pretty modest for most field crops. So in 2005, we saw 1.6% of all tomato acreage in this country managed under certified organic systems, over 3% of the apple acreage, and that's gone up since 2005 pretty substantially. Nearly 6% of the carrot acreage, nearly 4% of the lettuce acreage. For field crops, what you see in that ordering basically is that the crops that are used for feed grains don't have much adoption, but as the crop is used more for food consumption, you see a much higher adoption. So 3% of the dry pea and lentil acreage, we estimate from the certified certification data, is being managed under certified organic farming systems. But alas, only 0.2% of corn and soybean acreage in 2005. Okay, now I'm going to tell you about the ARMS survey. This is the agency's biggest survey. This is the survey that the Economic Research Service uses to calculate farm income numbers for the Department of Agriculture, to calculate as semi-required by Congress the cost of production estimates for a variety of major crops and livestock, and also for all the special research that we look at, resource issues, et cetera, that vary from year to year. So the exciting thing that we did in 2005 was to add a very large oversample of organic producers. Literally, we put into the list frame every single dairy producer that we could identify based on lists from the certifiers as well as lists from the two main processors in this country. So we captured a very large number of practicing organic dairy farmers in 2005. In 2006, we added a large organic oversample of organic soybean producers. And we're actually right now working on an apple survey, which is historic because we've never done a cost of production survey of a specialty crop before, and this one will have we'll be able to make comparisons with organic systems as well. What we're doing with the dairy data, and with the soybean data, which we have back at this point, is calculating cost of production, and also a whole bunch of other research, which I'm not going to show you details from, but the findings from the cost of production survey are already up on the web, and so I'm going to show you just a few slides on what they show. And those are the two papers. The first paper shows literal means, and then the second paper is a regression analysis that controls for the variety of factors that affect cost of production so that we can really look at exactly what the differences between organic and conventional costs are. And before I leave this slide, let me make one note. This ARMS data is actually available for use by researchers in universities. It's more valuable for people that are near agricultural research stations in each state, because you pretty much have to go to that agricultural research, that national agricultural research office in your state to use the data. But it is publicly available. So there's probably, we have three projects, big projects underway in the Economic Research Service. We have a big co-op agreement with the Iowa State University, and probably another 10 or 12 projects where people have actually just done a memorandum of understanding with us and are using the data on their own. Okay, this is what the data looked like for the dairy survey. We targeted dairy operations in 24 states, covering most of the dairy production in the U.S. That is the typical way these surveys are handled. And we got back over 1,400 conventional samples and over 300 organic samples that are complete and that were actually used in the analysis. Most of you know what organic, what makes an organic dairy, so I'm not sure I really need to belabor this slide since you're at the organic seminar. In 2005, according to our certification data, only about 1% of the total cows in the U.S. were under certified organic management. That's probably gone up very substantially since 2005, given some inducements for organic dairy producers to come in before a grandfather clause in the National Organic Rule, so they could come if they came in by a certain point in 2006, they could not use quite so much organic feed. Now they have to use all organic feed in their transition process. In 2007, this is data from the Agricultural Marketing Service. This is up on the web for about a year and a half now. They've actually been tracking total volume of organic milk sales as well as total volume of conventional milk sales based on their federal milk marketing orders. And you can see just in a one-year period between January 06 and January 07, total volume of total milk sales has gone up from 1.7% to 2.7%. One note on that, a lot more of the volume of organic milk is going into fluid milk sales, which is what these numbers reflect, versus sales for cheese and other dairy products. So that's partly why the you see a disproportionate number of milk sales versus the amount of cows under organic management. There are a number of big issues with organic dairy at this point. We see a lot of small dairy operations looking at it as a way to basically stay in business and survive, given the humongous push to really, really large farms in the dairy sector. Interpretation and enforcement of the organic pasture rule has come under increasing scrutiny. USDA decertified an operation this summer, a very large operation, partly because of its pasture weakness, and has another operation has ordered a number of significant changes in another operation and is watching that operation closely for at least a year. Because there's so little information, I think we actually saw a project earlier, but in general there's very little information about organic dairy in the United States. Okay, this is this somewhat startling graph shows the... Oh, I'm sorry. We haven't gotten to the startling graph yet. All right, but this graph is interesting. Pasture-based feeding, that's actually, we built in a question to the survey asking how much of the forage needs of the animals were being met by pasture during the grazing season. And we gave them option of up to 25%, 25 to 50, 50 to 75, 75 to 100. So the way we defined pasture-based feeding in this chart was 50% or more of the forage needs were being met by pasture during the grazing season. And obviously see well over 60% of the organic producers using that system versus under 20% of the conventional. Okay. That's perfect. and one other, let me just mention here, what the National Organic Standards Board would require, and I don't know how many people in here are really that interested in dairy, but I'll say it anyway. What the National Organic Standards Board has recommended to the Department of Agriculture is that 30% of the forage needs be met by pasture during the grazing season. But that's not codified yet into the rule. That is still the recommendation by the National Organic Standards Board. And the rule itself was required that the natural nutritional and behavioral needs of the animal had to be met by the animal species, including pasture for dairy animals, but it didn't say how much. So the National Organic Standards Board recommendation is to sort of close that gap on the ambiguity. And then you see, on the other hand, for conventional producers, they're using way more regularly scheduled veterinarian services, and they're using nutritionists to mix their feed mixes. So those were probably the three biggest practice differences in the data in this 44-page survey. Okay, so this is the startling graph. These are the differences in the mean costs for the organic operations and conventional operations. You see a pretty big gap there between the organic and conventional operations, the number that's listed. Organic producers were getting $21 in 2005, dollars per hundredweight, so they were covering their operating costs and their operating plus capital costs, but pretty much, or just barely, but not their total economic costs. It was similar for the conventional producer, covering the operating costs and the operating capital, but not quite the total economic costs. So my colleague, Bill McBride, did a regression analysis to look at the, to control for all the factors, farm size, et cetera, to see what the gap in those costs would be. And obviously you see especially the operating and total economic costs coming way down once you look just specifically at the management strategy itself. I'm going to end on that note. All right, our major conclusion from the study was that, yes, there are definitely incentives for small producers to come in to organic to preserve their operation. Probably less so for big producers as a startup organic dairy, and also that the pasture enforcement of a pasture rule is probably going to be important in terms of maintaining these incentives. Everything that we publish is on the organic briefing room. All of our organic stuff is on the organic briefing room, including this study. Also, I'm putting in the web page for the commodity costs and returns briefing room, which right now just has the results from this dairy study, but probably in the next few months we'll actually have the results from our soybean study as well. So thank you.
You guys have one quick question?
Okay. Yeah, the organic dairy producers were much, much smaller. They were concentrated in the Northeast and along the northern tier of the U.S., pretty much where probably the co-op Organic Valley got started. It's still concentrated in that area. And the organic producers were, yeah. Yes. Yes, exactly.